Hi, welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired, break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. We're back here with John Munger. He's the executive director of the Lopit Foundation. And we're in our second session here. Let's continue our conversation about the inner workings of how you developed to become such a great innovator.
Yeah, no, there's definitely many moving parts, and keeping everyone on the same page is actually a big part of, you know, what I do. Increasingly, and because now there's four different directors that work for the organization underneath me, and they're all doing great work. But we have to make sure that we're all moving in the same direction all the time, and that's definitely a challenge.
How do you make it work?
I'm big on trying to get to the objective of what we're trying to do. Why are we trying to do things as opposed to how we do them? I try and let folks figure out themselves.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah. Because if you know why you're trying to get there, and you know you're trying to get there, they'll figure out how to. We have great people working for us. They'll figure out how to get there. But that why kind of, you know, it can really matter, especially in a nonprofit. I think where, in a for-profit organization, the why, you know, and ultimately is to make money.
Yes.
And that really isn't the why for a nonprofit organization. We certainly need to and be very mindful of the bottom line all the time, because at the end of the day, for-profit or nonprofit doesn't mean that we, you know, don't have to pay attention there. You certainly do. You got to be able to pay the bills and pay your employees and everything every month. But you're doing it for some greater cause, and as long as we're keeping that in mind, that lets everyone do their job, and that I consider to be the biggest part of my job, is to make sure that question is answered and clear in people's minds.
Sure. And how often do you have your financial meetings?
We have board meetings, probably 5 or 6 board meetings per year. We have an interesting organization financially in that a third of our annual budget is wrapped up in this winter festival that we've talked about. And I tell our board, you know, the biggest decision you're going to make every year on our budget is whether to do the event or not. Once we decide to do it, there's really not a lot you can do to cut costs.
Because you have such a history of it, how long have you?
This is our 14th year we just went through. But it's very much a hit or miss event. And that's why if you had talked to me 2 weeks ago, you know, my emotional state would have been much, much different. Because at that time it hadn't snowed. We were afraid we were going to have a very truncated event, which would have meant less revenue this year, and even worse, less revenue next year, because people have these memories and they buy or not buy registrations based on what happened the year before.
Sure.
So it's an interesting, financially, we're an organization that's very dependent on the weather still.
Yeah. Yeah, for all your classes, because it's all outdoors.
That's the whole point of the organization, is that we're, you know, a year-round outdoor activity. And so one of our lessons is that we try and teach the world is that every day you can do something outside. It doesn't matter what the weather is.
Yeah.
But it can still have an impact on our bottom line significantly.
Yeah, and like if it's severely cold, I mean, less people are going to be coming to the Luminary Lopet evening.
You know, that has not actually turned out to be true.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yes, because, you know, the Luminary Lopet's not competitive. You can wear as much or as little clothes as you want to, not as little, but you can wear, you know, you can wear a lot of clothes, yeah. And if you're just standing around, that's one of those great lessons. You can be comfortable and figure it out. There's, you know, people say there's no bad weather, there's only bad clothing, and
that's a good way to look at it.
But for the competitive events, it's a little bit different. You need to have, you know, snow for skiing, and you need to have it'd be not bitterly, bitterly cold, because then you can get frostbite like I have right now. So,
yeah, good point. When you started the foundation, where did the money come from?
So when we started the foundation, my friend Piotr Bednarski, who now is our head coach and director of our Lopet Nordic Racing Program, we went and talked to a local hospital about sponsoring the event, because we had no money at the time, but we had this idea for this City of Lakes Lopet event. And sure. So we went to this hospital and talked to them, and afterwards, we were not feeling great about how the conversation went. It's not like they said anything negative, but they were, well, I don't know, you know, we have a lot of other priorities. And anyway, it turned out that we you know, I sent a note to RT Ryback, the Mayor Ryback at the time, and he sent a note along to them encouraging them, and lo and behold, they did sponsor us, and that was a big deal. It really helped the organization along, because we were able to do the event right then that year, and got us off on the right foot instead of having to kind of scrimp along and send messages that I think would have been unfortunate, you know, right from the beginning. I think now we're seen as an organization that does things right. And if we'd had to start out by, you know, not doing things right because we didn't have the resources, I think that would have been unfortunate.
Yeah. Wow. So knowing some really important people.
Well, you know, knowing them, I give Mayor Ryback a lot of credit. I mean, you know, I think what he was really good at, what he is really good at, is finding good ideas and then doing just enough pushing on his end to let you succeed. And he certainly did that with the Lopet Foundation. I think he's, you know, very proud of that coming out of his administration. And another example is the Nice Ride Bike Share program. He did the same thing with that.
Oh, so, yeah. And he's not the mayor of Minneapolis anymore. Are you still connected with him, though?
Absolutely, yeah. So RT is an honorary board member still. And he's, you know, remained involved. He helps with fundraising. He will help announce at events. He does events occasionally. And he's really been, you know, a friend and a mentor to me all the way along.
That's great to have a mentor as you evolve.
Yeah.
Yeah, in your leadership. So as you're looking forward, what are some areas that you would like to grow in your leadership?
Oh, boy. I don't necessarily.
Or how do you think about that?
Well, it's interesting. I occasionally I think to myself, well, I guess I am in a leadership position, and I don't really know how I got here. you know, because I was an attorney, and I didn't really think, you know, I tried to do a good job as an attorney, but it's very different from leading an organization. You know, one of the things that I think I do. A very uneven job on is being a kind of a level-headed person, and I think that's important, you know, for employees to come into the office every day and feel like they're going to get, you know, the same attention, the same treatment, and really the idea that things are going okay. I have days when I am very, very down. And, you know, I think that comes across to staff, and I think it's probably unfortunate. And I would love to be better at being, you know, even on things like that. So that's an area that I feel like I could really grow in.
Mm-hmm. So if you had some mentoring, that would be the area.
I think that would be probably the number one area that I feel like I could use some improvement in, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. What do you feel is the greatest aspect about your, why don't you describe what your mission is for the Lopet Foundation? What continues to give you the energy to keep doing all the work and keep organizing everybody? And you had mentioned in our prior interview or mentoring session that the results of the longer you're in this, of the people that are involved, both your staff and the other people involved in your programming, that really make a big difference, that you've made, the foundation has made a big difference in their lives and how they're, you know, and what they're doing with their lives.
You know, I think there's a couple questions in there, but, you know, what keeps me motivated is when I have an opportunity to, as I do on occasion, to, you know, to get out and talk to some of the kids involved in our programs, or you know, I'll occasionally encounter the kids from one of our teams out when I go out skiing or whatever it is, and it's really motivating to see the kids telling me, or, you know, either telling me or just seeing them, the impact that this is all having on them. You can see when they ski down a hill and make it down, and after they've fallen every other time, and the joy on their face and the sense of accomplishment, that keeps you going. We send people out to do interviews with the kids occasionally, and you know, we'll have little videos, and oh, no, this was on WCCO a couple weeks ago. The televisions tend to be interested in what we're doing in the weeks before our event, and they went out and interviewed kids that were doing our mini Lopet program, and one of the kids said, you know, who's an African-American kid, clearly hadn't skied before this year, and they interviewed him, and he said, you know, when I first started doing this, I fell down all the time, and I was very discouraged, but now I think it's so fun, and I would just tell all my friends to keep trying, and that's the lesson that I learned: when you fall down, you keep going, and that's the kind of thing that keeps me going in my job, and I guess I would be afraid I wouldn't be afraid now. A few years ago, I would have been afraid that this would have all died out if I left, and now I feel like we've gotten far enough that wouldn't happen, but I still feel like this is important work that we're doing, and, you know, need to keep doing it.
And how are you going to build in, what is your vision for the future? And you've had enough years in this, and you're thinking more of, yeah, who would replace me at some point?
I mean, that certainly comes to mind. You know, I'll tell you, every year getting through January and February, or December and January, I'm sorry, it's very, very hard. There's just a ton of pressure on the leadership in our organization
to make
things work. And, you know, and so that makes you pause and think, oh, who's going to do this when I run out of steam? But, you know, the vision, I mean, I guess one of the things that's been interesting is I feel like the vision for the organization has come from other people's suggestions, right? So we have this great, great community of people that are interested in skiing and biking and so forth. And over time, you know, the Luminary Lopet, it's a good example. our registration guy, who's an engineer, who is a very in the lines person.
Yeah,
he came and he said, you know, there's this event in northern Wisconsin called the Book Across the Bay, and they have these luminaries, and it's a really big event. I think we should do something like that. And that was the idea behind the luminary a little bit, which has become our biggest event. And, you know, I had, you know, nothing to do with that idea.
You heard it and then you made it happen.
I helped make it happen, but other people really made it happen. I mean, okay. You know, there's, yeah, but I, you know, that's right. That's what I consider myself to be, you know, helpful at, is taking someone's vision and kind of seeing it through and figuring out the practical pieces to make it happen and get people motivated to help with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
and you do it in a really large way.
Well, we try, yeah.
Yeah, but, like the Adventure Center, too. I mean, that's not an easy feat to get a new buildings and restructuring Worth Park.
That continues to be a big thing. It's going, you know, what's hard about that project, really, you know, the fundraising is challenging and so forth, but the really hardest part is that it's going to be a brand new type of endeavor for the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board. They've never kind of had this big of a partnership where they've really relinquished, you know, the control necessary to make it work. And it continues to be something that, you know, both the Park Board and the Lopit Foundation struggle with. But it's all going to be worth it. It's going to be really wonderful. So it's that perseverance is what, you know, comes right back into play there.
Yeah, and the ability to take the information and figure out what the problem is.
Right.
And how to get around it or through it or...
Right. So you asked about, you know, the vision for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I think is worth addressing, because I think there's sometimes a sense that, you know, we get that Adventure Center done and then we'll be done, or, you know, we've done all these things and maybe we're just going to kind of continue to do what we're doing in the future. And I think one of the things that I feel like in what the work we do is that there is all the world has swung, the pendulum of outdoor activity has swung so far away from outdoor activity relative to when we were young, that there's just umpteen work to do. People don't send their kids to school by themselves anymore. The kids don't, even the term safe routes to school, implies the opposite, right? Like there's all these unsafe routes to school, and if you're not on a safe route, maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, parenting has changed. Electronic devices have become so prevalent. And even, you know, we talked about our kids being on soccer together. Even the way organized sports has become so much more serious than it used to be.
Yeah.
And
they start at a younger age. I mean, now it's third and fourth grade where they're really...
Yep. And so, and that oftentimes has replaced in parents' minds the kind of kids learning lifetime activity skills or outdoor literacy that kids used to just acquire by having mom or dad toss them out the back door and saying, don't come back till dinner time. That doesn't really happen anymore. And so there's all this work to do around kids, around obesity, but also around adults. I mean, I think, you know, we talked about productivity at work and being able to focus, and I think people have gotten away from spending enough time out in the natural world, and so,
or the parents are so busy driving all their kids to all these events, and then you get to the events, you know, and you're sitting in the car, right? You get there, you walk in the building, and then you're sitting again.
Yes.
You know, I feel like maybe the next way that sports will innovate is to help parents be active while they're watching their kids.
Yeah, yes, and that is something that we've actually talked about. We have, you know, programs for kind of 8 to 12-year-old kids that are year-round kind of outdoor literacy things. And right now the model is mostly mom or dad drives the kid up, the kid gets out of the car and does the activities, and mom or dad either drives away or sits around. We were starting to talk about, well, maybe there needs to be elements for mom or dad to get reacquainted with these things. I mean, they probably have more of a learning curve than the kid even. So
Yeah. And if we look at, you know, how we grew up, that the sports or the interests that our parents are interested in.
Right.
But if you have a, you know, a whole group of parents that have never been exposed to these different sports, but they are getting their kids, they're driving their kids to the places. But you're right, you know, getting them engaged in it will help them also be more motivated to promote it.
Yeah, too. Yeah. That's really where you complete the loop. I mean, you can introduce the kid to these things, but when ultimately they go on a family trip and go biking together or go skiing together or hiking or whatever, that's when the kid says, oh, okay, this is something that's important. It's important to my family. It's important to society. It's something I really value. And so getting the parents out is kind of one of the next horizons for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I could definitely... I can see that happening, and
yeah.
I think it's really well needed. And I just believe 100% in what you're doing, and we're going to be more involved going forward. Doggone it, you sold me on.
Yeah, good. That's I sometimes describe myself as an evangelist of outdoor activities. So.
Well, and you're living and breathing it as well, so it's something that's in your bones, and that's part of mentoring. You know, that's why mentoring is so effective, because you're doing it yourself, and that's
it's interesting
a greater
that you
teacher.
Say that, Nancy, because one of the things that I really feel, you know, in my bones is that a little bit that talk is cheap. You know, that and with kids, okay. Oh, you know, running is really important every day because, you know, you're going to live longer if you run or, you know, exercise. And that's just in one ear out the other. I mean, the kids aren't going to be motivated by that. They're 11 years old. They're immortal in their eyes, you know. right?
I mean, yeah, that's true.
But, you know, we have quote-unquote coaches working with these kids year-round, and the kids see them every day going out running and skiing and biking, and they see them eating an apple for a snack instead of a Snickers bar.
Well, to your point, John, as far as, you know, the role modeling that's going on as the deepest form of mentoring and the whole family being involved in the process, I think is really more, like you're saying, that's what changes lives.
Yeah. It's that every day over a year, over 2 years, whatever, where someone that they think is important to them or that is important to them is doing a certain action, that seeps in much more than, I just saw something on television this morning about, I remember when Nancy Reagan was in and she came up with the just say no to drugs.
Yes.
What would be more important is having Nancy become an important person in their lives, and she doesn't do drugs. Well, that's maybe not something I'm going to do.
Yeah, and it comes from kids having mentors in their life, people that they admire, doing some things that they are gravitating toward.
Yep.
In the research by Tony Wagner on creating innovators, one of the other skills that he said are elements that are essential in developing innovators for life is a childhood of creative play leads to deep-seated interests that then also attribute to play, passion, and purpose, and a vision for life, and being fully engaged in life. And I think with technology, like you were talking about before, where we have all these distractions, or I see when we're with the family that, you know, we're in our family, but yet we're thinking about, you know, this other message that maybe somebody's sending through the phone, or, you know, you're still kind of emotionally kind of tracking what's going on with the people that you've been communicating with on the phone. And I just think the outdoor activities as a family, you know, help you do something together where you used to play cards. And I mean, my parents, we spent hours playing games and doing a lot of different activities. And I grew up on a dairy farm. We did chores together.
Yeah.
So we knew how to work together,
right.
And fight at doing chores.
Yeah, right. That's all part of it.
Or argue, or somebody's not doing their chores right, or, you know, whatever. But there's also this element that we need is to be able to play together in our families and really learn more about each other. And you do that with outdoor activities.
You know, I think that's right on. A couple things come to my mind. I mean, one is, first of all, I do that as a parent all the time, and I'm very disappointed in myself a lot of times. I mean, my kids will be talking to me, and instead of focusing on what they're saying, I'm focusing on what email I just read, or text message, or phone call, or, you know, whatever, you know, new communication thing is coming at me, and so I am distracted and not necessarily hearing them. And I think, you know, when you are outdoors, you're hopefully in the moment a little bit more, and you have a few less of those distractions. And I think, you know, for those of us who occasionally go to the Boundary Waters, that's, you know, that's where you lose all of that, right? I mean, you're stripped away of everything, and it's just you and your kids and a fishing rod or a tent, and you figure out how to put it up together or whatever, but you're getting to know each other without the intermediaries of these electronic devices, which I think, you know, really hurt that. And I think to the point of the author you were talking about, you know, I'm afraid they'll have a long-term negative effect on our innovation.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to really, I think we're fighting more for our personal time. And we're, you know, whatever what our values are, we're fighting more for. Or toward, to preserve that, because we are being advertised in such a huge volume that we've never experienced before, in every, you know, app we look at, or any website we visit, or, you know, any place we go to get information. You know, there's a lot of advertising going on and other things that are pulling us away. And so, yeah, it's changing a bit of our wiring, I think, in our brains.
Yeah.
So we'll see kind of how that plays out. But I think all of us together are working toward similar things, and trying to preserve what we can in our own families is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you mentioned earlier that you'd like to, you know, be, if you were working on one element of your leadership, it would be to be more even keel.
Yeah.
Well, part of what I see that happens and why I'm in the business of mentoring is because I think entrepreneurs need more support. And usually they lean too much on their staff because they talk about everything with their staff. And they have no place. I mean, you can go skiing, but no place to really talk about their own leadership. Because their demands are so great in all these other areas. But that's where another area where I think it's really important, if you're really focused in on that, to kind of devote some time, whether it's once a week or once a month, someplace where you can have someone and have the conversation to work on your own leadership skills.
I think that probably is an important element. And I think many of us get so focused on the next thing and the next day and the next hour that, you know, you don't set aside the time for your own kind of development.
Yeah. Well, and Michael Gerber is a long-term proponent of entrepreneurship. He wrote The Entrepreneurial Myth. And one of the things that he talks about in his books he's got mainly that's his book. And then he did The Entrepreneurial Myth Revisited. But the reason his philosophy is we end up working so much in our business that we don't work on our business. And we always need to balance out the two, being in it and then also working on how we're building it.
Okay, yeah.
And shaping it in the future. But in order to, you know, the longer we get into something, the more of what we see that we need to shift in our thinking, or like you're talking about, if you continue, like even with the Adventure Center, I'm sure you built a whole different skill set that you didn't know that you had in order to...
Yep, to do the fundraising and to make all that work. And actually, you know, we're starting to turn now. I mean, the key hasn't been turned on getting it built yet. But if it is built, it's going to be done in, you know, 9 months or 10 months. And we're starting to look at, okay, what do we need to do to have this be really successful when it opens? And I'm starting to delve into new skill sets that I need to develop.
Yeah, and you'll probably pull in some other people too to give you the support that you need too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Through that. Yeah. Okay. Well, if there was one or two things that you would suggest to anyone who was starting a nonprofit, what would be the nuggets you would share with them?
I mean, I think it's really important to have your mission, your vision, whatever it is, be the driving force, and every day sticking with that and asking yourself, you know, is this action going to help, you know, advance the mission or the vision? And if not, you know, why are you doing it?
Right.
I think, you know, I've seen nonprofits kind of lose that focus occasionally, and I'm sure we have occasionally. So I think that's one really important one, and I think the other one is much more mechanical. I mean, I would make sure that they have all of the pieces in place right from the start with the 501c3 status and all that stuff. It seems simple, but I've seen a number of organizations, including ours, not get off on quite the right foot in that way, and it's not like you can't recover from it, but it can take, you know, 10 hours on the front end or 100 hours on the back end, and you're better off with that 10 hours.
Yeah, but you don't see that going into it, so,
yeah,
right.
Yes, yeah. Right. You just think, well, you know, we'll just...
It's just paperwork.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, very sound advice. Yeah, I think our listeners who are starting nonprofits will benefit from that. Well, thank you so much for being here. I think our conversations, both of them, have been very rich, both in our first session and now in our second one.
Sure, yeah.
And would like to check in with you going forward.
All right. Well, this sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, Nancy. This is fun.
Well, good. All right. We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Or next Monday, I mean, my audience. Yeah.